Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, December 1st, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All stream directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zaktar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is Scott Johnson.
There he is right there. I see him.
Wow.
The Scott Johnson Experience. Thanks for having me back, guys. Always a pleasure to hang with you three.
Scott Johnson from The Instance Star Wars Edition as well.
Oh,
as
yeah.
The
it starts today. So if you're looking forward to that hot new MMO property, you might want to check it out.
Isn't he podcast award winning?
On the Frog Pants. We are all podcast award winners here today.
That's right.
How's it feel?
You're hanging with winners now.
How's it feel to be in the winner's circle?
It feels pretty good. Although. I'm most excited to say today that my debt is repaid to you guys, because every time I come on here, I have such a good time that when I leave, I feel like my good time is not what it could be. So I'm glad to be back. Jason Howell, you no longer owe me $5. I'm on the show. Here we go.
Oh, wow. That was unexpected.
Chuck that one off.
All right.
Fair enough. I don't know what I'm talking about.
What the show does is every day we take all of the stories in the world and we all read them.
Every
and then we have
one.
Someone who's really smart, like Scott today, come on and share the perspective so that you don't have to waste your whole day reading everything on the internet. We do that for you and then boil it down into the essentials. Starting off today with AT&T's fierce rebuttal of the FCC report we talked about yesterday. This is regarding AT&T and T-Mobile's merger. AT&T issued a statement in response to FCC's publications of their findings about the T-Mobile merger. The commission's, AT&T Senior Executive Vice President of External and Legislative Affairs, Jim Ciccone, said, "We believe that the utter absence of balance is clear and demonstrates that the document lacks all credibility." And they went on from there.
Tell me how you really feel.
Not quite as long as the FCC's damning piece from yesterday, but they pick it apart. They say that in response to the FCC's claim that AT&T would be forced to expand LTE beyond 80% anyway, they say the report apparently assumes a high enough level of competition exists in rural areas to force us to go above 80%, but there's not enough competition in the cities. It's very fragile. Well, which is it, FCC? Is there enough competition or isn't there? Which is kind of a false choice. There's a lot of rhetorical tricks going on here. Also says it appears the FCC did not inform the president that in their view this was not a needed or worthy objective because it was apparently going to happen anyway regarding rollout of wireless
to
rural areas.
Which The Verge pointed out
is,
well, that's rather snide.
It was a little very snide.
Yeah.
Lots of point-by-point stuff here on the spectrum crunch. The report's authors find this evidence inconvenient and simply claim it does not exist. And they claim the FCC underreports regional spectrum holders' influence by averaging across regions. Now, all of this is rhetorically picking on what the FCC's opinions were about the merger. However, in the end, they said, "In this circumstance, we understood the issues such a combination might raise, and we made clear publicly and privately our readiness to address those concerns." So even though they just said that all those concerns were a bunch of hooey, in the end, they're like, but we'll still fix it. Please let us still buy T-Mobile.
I don't know. I don't really read it that way. I read it as, we understand the issues that might have been raised, but the FCC is just calling out stuff that isn't true.
Well, they are saying that. You're right. But they're saying our readiness to address those concerns, which
there are going to be concerns.
We're mad that you made this public after we pulled a jerk move by trying to withdraw a request at the last minute so you wouldn't make it public. But in the end, there are obviously concerns, and we'll adapt.
It's great psychology going on here because you can say, well, AT&T would never go through the trouble of being so fiery about this rebuttal unless they really made good points. But at the same time, they're just mad.
Yeah.
I wonder if any of the redacted stuff in the FCC statement would address any of the points AT&T brought up.
Because the Spectrum one. The Spectrum one would.
We didn't get the full... It was 190 pages that was released, but not all of it's in there. So, I mean, AT&T could have the option of, well, we're going to make this point that we know that's covered up.
AT&T came back at the FCC saying, you say T-Mobile can get enough Spectrum to go to LTE. It's just not true. But the FCC's reasoning for that is mostly redacted. And the supposition is that T-Mobile would be able to strike partnerships with cable companies like Cablevision to get the spectrum they need to roll out LTE, because the cable companies all own a bunch of spectrum. That's actually something Sprint hopes doesn't happen, even though Sprint is objecting to the AT&T-T-Mobile merger.
Did any of us expect anything less than this kind of response from AT&T, maybe them taking the high road and going... Yeah, we are aware of your concerns. Move ahead. But, I mean, did they have to go so...
I think that the FCC forced their hand. That
they're on the defense now.
The AT&T's whole reason for, in the early hours of Thanksgiving, trying to withdraw their request was to keep all this stuff from coming into public. So now that it came out into the public, they have to fight it. And that's why you see so many rhetorical tricks in what they're saying, is they're trying to change the perception. In some cases, they counter facts with facts, and they say, look, you got your facts wrong. But a lot of it is like, oh, well, you're saying this one thing over here. I guess that means you don't agree with this other thing over here. Those are rhetorical tricks where you're just trying to spin it and make people believe, oh, well, the FCC must not know what they're talking about. And the FCC, you would think, would at this point rise above it and say, okay, you know, we're done. We're going to back out of this. But on the official FCC Twitter, the commission's chief of the Consumer and Governmental Affairs Bureau, Joel Gurin, wrote, deeply concerned about at AT&T public policy Jay Ciccone comments today. I am deeply
concerned. They're all just playing public warfare then. It's all about opinion at this point. So if they want this merger that bad and the government has released papers that are in the public hands that make us, you know, raise our eyebrows at AT&T, I don't know what else they do to make their stand. They kind of have to do this because that's sort of the game they're playing, and now they're playing it on Twitter, which seems crazy to me that, you know, a government agency is basically trolling AT&T on Twitter.
Well, maybe they're that's deeply just, concerned because they agree with all of the AT&T's objections. They just said they're deeply concerned.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, this idea that they say the document lacks all credibility, but then sort of turn around and say, we'll address your concerns, means that obviously there's some credibility. But I think this is all just talk. It's about, you know, perception and public response. And
This is all hot air public response. You're absolutely right. What's going to happen now is that the Department of Justice is going to show up in court, and AT&T is going to show up in court, and a judge is going to decide whether there's any hope of this merger continuing. And they're likely not to decide that it should continue in the current form, and AT&T will then come up with their counteroffer, whatever that is, whether it's a joint venture with Deutsche Telekom, which was proposed out there, whether it's kind of putting together a new consortium to buy up parts of T-Mobile and split it up a bunch of people. Something is going to happen. That's one thing you can be sure of, but we're going to have to wait for that court case to find out what that is. We talked about Carrier IQ yesterday, the software that exists on many phones, and a researcher has found that it pretty much sends everything you do somewhere. We don't know exactly where, but it does track keystrokes, and it does track the content of text messages and sends it out. Today, everyone falling all over themselves to try to make it clear that they aren't the ones involved in the Carrier IQ software being on your phone.
Yesterday was all about Android phones.
It was, well, the demonstration was on an HTC Android phone. Although the researcher said RIM and Nokia also had this software, RIM says, we don't put the software on our phones and we don't authorize it to be on our phones. So implying if you found it on their phones, wasn't their fault. Nokia says, we've never added this to our phones. Verizon says, we've never put it on any of the phones we carry on our network. O2, Vodafone, and Orange, France Telecom's service, all said, we don't put this on any of our phones. We don't use this software. HTC said it doesn't receive data. I mean, they're caught red-handed, right? Because that's the phone in the video. So they said, look, we don't receive this data, and we're looking for ways to turn it off. We promise. A new report out today says there are references to Carrier IQ software in iOS 5, which had Apple running uncharacteristically to comment quickly, saying, we used to use it, but we stopped with iOS 5, and we plan to remove it completely in future updates.
Isn't that their way of saying So any of you who had a first generation, a 3G and a 3GS, we were tracking you the whole time. And that's kind of the, well, if you translated it roughly, right?
Glasses half empty, glasses half full.
Yeah, sure. Perhaps you'd like a very secure 4S.
That's right. That's a great way to sell 4Ss. Google Nexus One, the Nexus S, and the Galaxy Nexus, along with the original Zoom tablet, do not contain Carrier IQ software. An earlier CIQ press release, Carrier IQ press release from weeks before this all broke, touts a partnership with Vodafone, Huawei, and NEC, Huawei being that Chinese manufacturer. Vodafone says, that was a trial. That's ended. We're not doing it anymore either. Nobody wants to come anywhere close to this. In fact, U.S. Senator Al Franken has sent a letter to Carrier IQ's president, Larry Lenhart, asking him to explain exactly what is going on here. What does the software record? Why does it record it? Who does it share it with? And Franken notes, as well as a law professor, and he's probably getting it from this law professor, that some of the info Carrier IQ collects may violate federal privacy laws, including the Electronic Communications Privacy Act and the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. Big props to Sean Hollister from The Verge, who, full disclosure, is engaged to be married to my sister-in-law, spoke with Andrew Coward, the VP of marketing Carrier IQ. Coward said they have no further comment now, but they will have a comment after they have an external security company conduct independent validation of the privacy implications of what was shown in the video we saw yesterday.
How could it be that Carrier IQ, which, like, on their webpage, they have something like 141 million, they're installed in 141 million phones. Mm-hmm. How could they not have, like, statements ready to go on this? It's not like they...
Because they didn't expect anybody to find it.
But, I mean, they
have... Their first reaction was to send a cease and desist. Their whole business strategy has obviously been predicated on no one knowing that this exists.
No one knows them, so this is a secret that was going to go on forever? I mean, is this a business plan?
Stranger things have happened.
It just seems like a very odd... I mean, if they're going out there and they're marketing themselves to carriers and they're saying, look, you want to get stats, and we know that Sprint is one of the companies that uses these guys, because Sprint has actually had that statement we talked about yesterday. And everybody else saying, we've never used these guys. I mean, it's strange.
Well, it's not like Carrier IQ hasn't said anything. Here's their statement that they have put out, which Coward was saying, we don't have anything more to say. But their statement was, while we look at many aspects of a device's performance, we are counting and summarizing performance, not recording keystrokes or providing tracking tools. The metrics and tools we derive are not designed to deliver such information, nor do we have any intention of developing such tools.
But they have tools that do exactly that.
Well, whether or not anyone's
using them or not.
Their software is collecting this information, actually not even collecting is the right word, sending this information, but they may not be recording it on the other end.
Okay,
now, that begs the question,
but they
right?
just said these tools we derive are not designed to deliver information like this, but
I think
that's exactly what it's doing.
I think what they're talking about is the tools that the carrier would have at the other end to look at the aggregated information. And that goes back to my guess yesterday that this is an engineering issue where somebody said, you know what, just to cover the bases, I'm going to send everything. The tool at the other end is only going to show certain information. But this way, when they come back and say, hey, we want to look at like how many text messages were sent per hour in aggregate, he can say, yeah, it's already in there. Just tweak this variable. It makes it easier, right?
Which is why a lot of the carriers might be like, seriously, we have no idea how to unlock any of this information, even if we had it.
Right, because Sprint has said...
That's pretty much exactly what they said.
You know, they said yesterday, like, we do use Carrier IQ, but we use it just to see network performance, and we don't use it for tracking. Now, we got an interesting email from Ian in Atlanta, who's defending Carrier IQ, saying if cell phone carriers wanted to see the content of text messages and browsing history, they could do it at the network level just by tapping your phone calls and texts at the network level. They wouldn't have to put anything on the phone. The thought that the carriers are secretly logging all of this via third parties is a little crazy. Software that logs phone and network performance can be invaluable to carriers honing their networks and phone manufacturers trying to build better products. Should this type of activity be disclosed to users? Absolutely. But let's wait and hear what is officially being done with the data before we start hanging carriers and Carrier IQ out to dry.
Now, one of the things about when Carrier IQ was shown to be on iOS, the way you could turn it off is by turning off diagnostics and usage in the settings screen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, I mean, there is that little pop-up that comes up on a lot of phones that says, do you want to help whatever company by sending diagnostics? Does this seem much more innocuous when it's that kind of data? It's like, oh, yeah, they're sending everything for diagnostics, but I okayed it. I mean, is that actually enough notice to say what you're sending out?
Well, you should be able to dig in if you want and say, well, what are you sending as part of the diagnostics?
My SMS messages in full?
I don't mind if they know. Well, I mean, they're going to know for billing purposes anyway how often I send a text message. I don't want them to know what's in it. I don't want that logged. That's the word I was looking for earlier. They're logging, but they're not necessarily recording. If that makes any sense.
That makes sense.
In other words, they got a log, and then that log may not get processed in a way that stores all of that information. But the question is, why are they logging this? And I think we see Carrier IQ going, you know what? We're not sure what we're collecting.
Yeah.
That's why they're having an outside security firm look at this, because they want to be able to come forward and say, okay, this is what we thought was happening. We had an independent party look at it and find out that this is actually what was happening, and this is what we're going to do about it, which is the responsible thing to do. But the question is, and whether I'm right about it being an engineering solution or not, they should never have been recording this information without your knowledge from the beginning.
The Sprint bit reminds me, the little conspiratorial person that lives in me, he's very small and rarely speaks up, but sometimes he says things.
Thank you.
Yeah, Carl, we'll call him Carl. DB Carl, actually. Tom knows what that is. that little guy once in a while will say something, and he's saying to me right now that Sprint's saying, well, we only use it for the performance data. We don't collect anything else. It's kind of like saying, well, I only get Playboy for the articles and not for the photos. You know what I'm saying? Like, it feels disingenuous, and the whole thing feels a little weird. Like, Apple sort of admitting that they've just kind of barely taken it out, and obviously they knew about it, and well, why would they take it out if it's a perfectly innocuous piece of software and they didn't know it was logging or collecting this data? Well, then why take it out? Like, they have there's too much unexplained stuff, and that little guy in my head won't shut up.
I know what you mean, Ayaz, when you said how could they not have had something a little bit more prepared for something like this, because this is a sort of story that freaks people out. This is the, you know, a privacy advocate's worst nightmare. Like, wait, you're recording everything on my phone, every picture that I take, every message that I send. You know, it's a nightmare situation. And even if they're not doing any of that stuff, you have to believe that they truly don't know how their own software works, or else they'd be prepared to say, okay. Yeah, we knew somebody one day would ask this question, and here are all the things that we're not doing to ruin your privacy.
And that's why it reminds me so much of the Google Wi-Fi collection, because Google had no idea that their Street View cars were collecting that information. They had to start investigating themselves to figure out what had happened. So I really think that it's something like that. But you're right, it's a nightmare scenario. Let's move on to something different. NC State University researchers Michael Grace, Yajing Zhu, Xi Wang, and Xuxiang Zhang published a paper finding Android smartphones from Motorola, HTC, and Samsung don't properly protect privileged permissions from untrusted applications. They looked at the HTC Legend, the Evo 4G, the Wildfire S, the Droid, the Droid X, the Epic 4G, the Nexus One, and the Nexus S, and confirmed that, yes, explicit capability leaks were happening that allowed applications to exploit a public interface or service of another app without making a permission request to the user. So if another app had certain permissions and allowed, you know, geolocation and collecting addresses or manipulating your contact list, malicious apps could kind of hijack those permissions and use them themselves, and you would never know that was happening. Implicit leaks were also found. That's where applications inherit permissions from another application signed with the same digital certificate. That's only going to happen if you get two applications from the same company. So that's the less of a concern. But the upshot is an untrusted app on these affected phones can manage to wipe out the user data, send out SMS messages, record user conversations, or obtain user geolocations, all without asking for any permission. So even if you don't have Carrier IQ, somebody could put some malware on your phone and do all the same things.
Well, that's just like a whole bowl of sunshine right now, right? It's all going to get better, right?
It's refreshing.
Yeah, so I'm being watched if I have any phone, apparently, or if I run an Android device, I can have apps that are doing this, can be malware. I mean, I think there was all these scares in China about malware that did similar things. Like, they were sending out SMSs and they were calling people just to bring up charges. This is one of those. You can prevent this, though, with not installing certain applications, but this was using pre-installed application permissions.
Right. So the permissions that are hijacked came with stock applications. Mm-hmm. So if you never installed another application, you'd be fine. But if you somehow got infected by installing a piece of malware or getting tricked into installing a piece of malware, then those malware applications could hijack the privileges of the stock install. Mm-hmm. Now, Google and Motorola have confirmed the vulnerabilities, but we should hasten to point out that the Google reference designs, the Nexus One and the Nexus S, did not have the explicit capability leaks. They had a couple other minor vulnerabilities that weren't of a great concern, but they didn't have these big capability leaks that the other phones from Motorola, HTC, and Samsung had. Samsung and HTC are having trouble getting back to the researchers, although Motorola is cooperating, as is
the
Google.
The line's busy. Every time we call, it just rings and
so
rings.
Then somebody deleted all the data on all our phones.
Is that kind of possibly pointing in the direction of the overlays that the different manufacturers are putting onto these phones?
No, not necessarily.
It's creating that window?
It could be the overlays, or it might not be. It just means that they are changing the Android stock in a way that changes the privileges. So they might be doing that because of the overlay. They might be doing it for some totally different reason.
Or as part
reason.
Of just their general customization, whether it has anything to do with the overlay or not, right?
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, WikiLeaks has posted 287 documents about international surveillance. And
Julian, does it get better at any point?
Julian Assange said, who here has an iPhone? Who has a BlackBerry? Who uses Gmail? Well,
everybody
you're all
raises
screwed.
Their hands.
That's a quote. You're all screwed, by
the way. He pointed to these 287 documents. I know, it sounds like something I would make up for someone to say. That's actually a quote. You're right.
There it is.
The reality is that intelligence operations are selling right now mass surveillance systems for all those products. The 287 documents actually detail proposals for intelligence agencies to use malware to spy on large groups of people. And, you know, the WikiLeaks post's point is this is happening without court surveillance to groups of people that aren't under suspicion. But the capability is out there to either use unsecured Wi-Fi access points. So if you go to a coffee shop or something, you could fall under this surveillance, or to infect you and get you through social engineering or some other kind of malware to install the tracking apps that would then be able to track everything you do and report back to the intelligence agencies. They're doing the same things that all the hackers want to do.
It's interesting they threw Gmail in there, you know, as kind of the weird outlier that isn't a phone, that isn't a device, is something you may use on your device. But that's interesting.
Well, that's because this is about laptops and desktops as much as it is about phones.
So why? I guess what I'm getting at is I wonder why Gmail is more specifically targeted here than, say, your Yahoo account is, you know, the worst thing ever and is attracting all sorts of nefarious activity.
Well, I think he probably just picked a service that he knew a lot of people
device.
Would use.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
You have a Gmail account? Yeah. Well, you're screwed. You're all screwed.
So we're all screwed,
you got a toaster,
screwed equally.
You're screwed.
If we're all screwed all equally, screwed. We're all fine then, right?
Well, as long as we're not terrorists, we're fine.
Right, okay.
If you're a terrorist, you might not be fine.
Did you, Jason, I wasn't paying attention, I apologize. Did you show the stills from the Ars Technica document?
Because
that's the one that's really damning. Ars Technica dug up one of these and put screenshots up of the PowerPoint presentation where you're actually seeing the pitch to surveillance companies about why they should actually, you know, here's our SSL decryption product. You can intercept keys in the application. Decoding possible. It goes on, and there's some stuff about how it can be installed. Social engineering, zero-day exploits, injection proxy. You know, here's what you can do to catch the ne'er-do-wells on Wi-Fi. You can even track people across different Wi-Fi access points, apparently. I'm sold. I'm ready to get this stuff. So, all right, let's take a break, and we'll move quickly through the rest of our discussion stories. But Netflix.com/twit, 30-day free trial. What more is there to say? Watch a bunch of movies, a bunch of TV shows for 30 days, absolutely free. Unlimited amounts of streaming from Netflix.com. You can get all kinds of popular stuff like Breaking Bad and Walking Dead and new movies from all kinds of different movie theaters, movie production houses. Check it out, Netflix.com/twit. If you already have Netflix, pass that URL along. Pay it forward, because anybody can use it to get the 30-day free trial. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Let's move on to something fun. Google wants to take on Amazon Prime. According to the Wall Street Journal, they are in talks with major retailers and shippers to provide a next day for a low fee service that lets consumers shop for goods anywhere on the web, but still receive orders in a couple of days.
So what, they would shop at a variety of retailers, but just go through Google's system?
You probably, and in I'm guessing you would go through the Google product search,
uh-huh.
and then there would be partners, and then if you're a Google Prime or whatever they call it member, you could get free two-day shipping.
Does Amazon,
that's interesting.
Does Amazon work that way? I mean, I always thought Amazon, the Prime service they offered was just with Amazon. It wasn't that they had.
Yeah, it is, exactly.
Because it applies to anything you buy within the Amazon system.
Right, it doesn't apply to some things that are from external partners, even if you're buying it through Amazon.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So what Google could do is one-up them and say, well, we got multiple partners if you're shopping in Google. And the reason they're doing this is because people are searching directly on Amazon for products now, instead of going to Google and searching for products. Quick survey here. When you search for a product, you go to Amazon or Google or somewhere else?
I already have Amazon Prime, so I'm going to check Amazon first.
See? Yeah. Well, that's exactly what they're after here. Scott, what about you?
Same. Amazon every time. I go there straight and don't mess around. Sometimes eBay, usually Amazon.
I usually actually do go to Google, and usually at the top of the product's results list is an Amazon link. So
Jason
I'll
is a Google fanboy, so that's understandable.
not
I'm
true.
I'm just kidding. Sarah, what about you?
I'm kind of half and half. There's certain products that I just know Amazon will have a good price on, or at least competitive, so I'll go direct. But yeah, if it's just something out of the blue, I wait to see what rises to the top of my Google search.
I probably lean towards Amazon these days because, now that they have ThinkGeek as a partner and Target as a partner, so many places that I know, they're likely to have this. That I'll look up prices there. I used to use Google to look up prices, but their product search lagged. Frugal, remember? Lagged for so many years. So this is Google's chance to try to get some of that behavior back. Service is expected to go under a pilot test in San Francisco next year. Of course, this is all from people familiar with the matter, so take it with a grain of salt.
Be interesting if Amazon did it with them. Like, would they became one
Amazon
of the
became
partners.
A partner. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not? It can't hurt, right? More customers, more places. StatCounter and Net Applications released their browser usage numbers today. They're a little different. StatCounter says that IE has 40.6% of the market share worldwide, but Chrome has passed Firefox. Chrome has 25.7%, Firefox 25.2%. Net Applications still has Chrome behind Firefox. They also have a larger share for IE worldwide, 56.2%, Firefox with 22.1%, and Chrome behind at 18.2%. Although they say if the trend continues where Chrome is gaining and IE and Firefox are declining, then Chrome will pass Firefox by March under their stats. So it looks like this is nothing really new, but Chrome on the rise, i.e. not declining as fast as it used to be, but it is, and Firefox just sort of eroding slowly.
I mean, Firefox appealed to the same people who ended up using Chrome. That happened to me. Like, I moved from Netscape to IE to Firefox, and then I'm like, okay, Chrome is just faster. It's lighter. It seems load pages faster. It just seems like it's so stripped down. Even though now there's all this feature creep and extension capability, it's feeding that same group. So it's almost like it's cannibalizing this target group, because IE is not going to start gaining anything, I don't think, even with IE10, unless what's going to happen? That are nerds really going to go from Chrome to IE? I just don't see that happening.
I also find that, and Tom, I know you're an exception because you've gone back to Firefox recently, but I find that, out of curiosity and because I hear good things about a new browser, I went exactly the same procession that you did, Ayaz. I went from IE to Firefox. I was very happy with Firefox for a long time, and then I heard enough good stuff about Chrome that I tried Chrome.
Yep.
But it's rare, I think, that you go back, because you get used to the way that a browser looks, and then you open up another browser and you go, I'm too used to the way that it looks now. I mean, I still have that problem with Safari, even just because I'm so used to Chrome. I like the interface, keep all my tabs.
I was using Chrome, and I really liked its tab management. I liked a lot of things about it, but it was crashing so much because of Flash, and ironically, because of my use of Google Docs, that when Firefox's latest version came out and claimed to have better tab management, I went back and tried it. The tab management still isn't as good as Chrome, but they've improved it enough that the stability I get with Firefox is enough to keep me using Firefox.
I mean, you could say there are Chrome extensions where you can just disable anything that runs Flash, but that's not accounting for the people who are picking up Chrome. I mean, most people who are using browsers in general just want every page to work. They're not going to go out of their way to try to strip Flash out of pages.
And Scott, you use what, Opera, Conqueror?
Oh, you know me. What's that stupid one that was on the Mac for a while? I can't remember the name of my wife likes
Safari.
So much.
Safari.
No. Although, nice Camino? Stab there. You're a hater. You're a hater. No, I think what I'm the biggest fan of these days is an interesting combination of both Firefox and Chrome. I use Chrome for its strengths and Firefox for its strengths. And I hate that you mentioned it already, but ironically, some of Chrome's biggest weaknesses are using Google products. It drives me crazy that Docs is so unstable sometimes in Google or in Chrome. I can jump over to Firefox and have no problem with Google Docs. So I don't get that. If they can get that solved, I may use Firefox less. But they both got their place, and you know, I'll stick with that for a while.
Maybe we should all start using Flock again.
We should all.
I say Lynx.
I think we should all go to Opera.
No, I'm going to Lynx. Forget it. I'll text all the time.
I'll see you guys at Flock.
You know, that was my first browser, Lynx.
Is Family. Flock still around? Gosh, I made that joke. I don't even know if it's relevant.
Rock melt.
Flock browser.
Sleep near. Camino.
All right, let's Camino. Finish. That's it. Camino.
Was that it? That Camino was it. Was that on? Was all it. Right, there we go.
All right.
Best Buy website shows that the Kindle Fire is their top-selling tablet, followed by the 16-gigabyte Wi-Fi-only iPad. A range of other iPad flavors from different carriers are scattered throughout. So you could immediately make the argument that, well, Kindle Fire only has one SKU, and iPad has so many different SKUs. The iPad could still be outselling the Fire at Best Buy, but it's certainly not a bad thing for the Fire that it's at the top of the list. Combine that with some analyst reports. Display search analyst Richard Shim expects Amazon to ship up to 6 million Fire tablets now. This season, they had originally projected 4 million, so they've revised it up.
And wasn't 4 million already?
It was considered to be an aggressive projection.
Yeah, right? Well, didn't it go up to 4 million from like 3 when we first heard about the Amazon Kindle Fire?
They kept revising it up.
So it's double now.
J.P. Morgan analyst Mark Moskowitz said he trimmed his fourth quarter sales estimates for Apple's tablet to 13 million from 13.3 million. That's not a huge percentage. Moskowitz even said that the lower forecast mostly comes because of limited growth in production issues rather than the Fire. But he said the Fire is a factor here, and he believes that over time the iPad will actually gain more traction in the business and educational markets so that they shouldn't worry about declining too much. But Kindle Fire, is it the gift this season?
I think it is.
The other thing is the iPad came out, in March? iPad 2, so people who wanted it already got it. And they're like, oh, great, it's not selling really well when everyone who wanted one already had one. I mean, not everyone. I'm sure there's people who don't have it. But, I mean, the thing is the Kindle's the new thing, the Kindle Fire
For whatever reason, it doesn't have the glow of newness that the Fire has.
And it's $200. I mean, it's got a lot of things going for it. I just think and it's Best Buy. I mean, the thing is people go to Apple to get their iPads as well. I mean, you go to Amazon to get your Fire at times. I mean, it seems like...
Well, Best Buy has a nice little Apple...
Right, I'm just saying, I just don't think that Best Buy's numbers are necessarily indicative of a greater trend.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Fire would be at the top of Amazon's list. Obviously, iPads.
Well, it is.
Get them through Apple.
I'm not even paying attention to that because, of course, it's going to be at the top of Amazon's list. Right.
I mean, I think it's the new thing. The price is right. People want the new cool thing.
If you went to Apple, I'll bet you at Apple the iPad's way out selling the Fire at the Apple Store. Just to guess.
I don't know, Scott. I think you should check your sources.
Xiaowu's analyst stood outside the Apple Store and counted zero Kindle Fires.
See, that's
I was at the Apple Store
something.
This morning.
Yeah.
I asked for a Kindle Fire. I wanted to give it to my mom as a gift.
You.
No, they just said, don't know what you're talking about.
They're like, you want a Kindle of Fire? Try Home Depot.
iPad 2. That's 64, 3G.
You want some fire kindling? What? You know, I would actually say that the Fire is a really nifty device. I probably don't need it. And I think this is a weird time of year when we know the cycle of iPad releases to even get that concerned because an iPad 3 is right around the corner anyway in the spring.
Yeah.
Or something like that. So I think it's a lot to do about nothing, basically.
Let's kindle a fire by starting the news feed. Michael O'Leary, the Senior Executive Vice President for Global Policy and External Affairs of the Motion Picture Association of America, said that the industry is meeting with congressional staff to alter the Stop Online Piracy Act, a.k.a. SOPA. Leary said, quote, "We will come forward with language that will address some of the legitimate concerns." He also took a swipe at opponents, saying they're just running out the clock trying to preserve the status quo. But we'll change the act anyway, somewhat.
The New York Times is reporting that TPG, which is a venture firm currently pursuing a minority stake in Yahoo, is talking with LinkedIn founder Reid Hoffman for his expertise on the matter. They want everybody to weigh in at this point. And related Yahoo News, there's a rumor that somebody out there may pay $20 a share. Kara Swisher at All Things D thinks it's just a stock manipulation ploy that appeared to have worked. So, all right, now we've heard every angle pretty much. What's definitive about Yahoo's sale right now is nothing.
Right, right. All of this is rumor.
People are unhappy with the Jawbone Up, the wristband that's meant to track your fitness and health. Complaints include the cap falls off way too easily, failures to sync with its iOS app, and battery issues. This is weird because this was on All Things D, but I could have sworn I heard this yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. Sarah was complaining about the cap falling off yesterday.
This thing falls off, and it's on pretty snugly, but it still falls off.
Jawbone CEO, speaking to All Things D, said that these issues affect a minority of users, and the company's working on solutions. Jawbone is also offering free replacements if your up is defective.
Good to know.
So first of all, you're a minority.
Congratulations.
Well.
Welcome to the club.
And you can get a free replacement.
Okay.
Sprint signed a four-year deal to pay Clearwire $1.6 billion over 4 years for access to Clearwire's WiMAX network. Sprint gets unlimited access to Clearwire's network for the next 2 years and limited access starting in 2015. Clearwire gets cash. They needed it to pay off a $237 million interest payment that the company had considered skipping, which I tried that once with my bank. They didn't like it so well. So good thing you didn't have to do that, Clearwire.
Barnes & Noble's second quarter was full of good news and bad news for the company. The good news is that the Nook tablet is the fastest-selling Nook the company has made, and sales related to the Nook, digital sales, and the devices totaled $220 million. The bad news is that Barnes & Noble had a net loss for the quarter and missed analyst expectations.
Well, apparently Siri doesn't know everything. Several groups, including the ACLU, have taken issue with Siri because it has no information when it comes to finding abortion clinics. Now, Apple says, and they actually responded, the app is in beta, and this is not an intentional omission. It doesn't have a pro-life.
Yeah, it's got everybody up in arms, a lot more than the fact that it doesn't have movie times. Even though Siri isn't pleasing everyone, a ChangeWave survey found that 49% of iPhone 4S users say Siri is the best feature about their phone. Ease of use came as a runner-up. The least favorite thing about the 4S was short battery life, followed by the lack of meaningless 4G. Whatever that is.
I don't like short battery life either.
Yeah, you know what? Me either.
Google's added a new feature to Google Hangouts. You'll be able to make free phone calls in the U.S. and Canada from a Hangout. If you want to find the feature now, you have to visit plus.google.com/hangouts/extras. This is just the newest extra added to Hangouts. Older ones included screen sharing and Google Docs integration.
YouTube's redesign is going live today. It matches that Google Plus aesthetic that has become ubiquitous on Google properties and puts YouTube channels right in the spotlight. When you log in, you'll see activities from users you subscribe to. The new YouTube will also pull video recommendations from Google Plus and Facebook.
Let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
And the randomizer's spitting out a cat today.
Yeah.
We needed this.
Samuel Cox is Sarah Lane's new hero. He has developed the e-sleeper. An Emacs shell tricked out with lights and cozy blankets, but that's not all. An infrared beam is monitored by an Ethernet-connected Arduino, and when the cat breaks the beam to enter the e-sleeper, lights come on, a startup chime sounds, and the cat's entry time is recorded. When it breaks the beam again to leave, lights switch off, and a random phrase is tweeted to @esleeper1.
It's like Virgin America for cats.
Now, I pushed for this story because the first half of the show was so depressing. We're being tracked. All our data is out there. But at least this cat's having a good time.
But really, this is the same story all over again.
He's being spied on.
Cat's now being tracked.
Oh, no.
Apple product. The EMAC.
Cat wiretapping laws.
Oh, no.
Wow. Oh, see, it even knows when the cat leaves.
Yeah.
The lights turn off.
And there's a camera on him, so I mean, it's even worse. So you're also being watched, cat. Sorry for ruining that.
Yeah, Happy Mac and chat is like, so the cat likes these lights? That was my question, too. I think my cats would be like,
light
turn these off.
But you're right. They were Virgin America lights, so they kind of calm you down.
Right.
Let's check what's on the calendar.
What's better than that iOS game Infinity Blade? More Infinity Blade. Infinity Blade 2 is available in the iTunes App Store today for $6.99.
Scott, have you stopped playing it yet?
Yeah, I've only gotten really just barely into it, but I have to review it for another show, and I'm really looking forward to it. I played it on a giant 42-inch screen at a showing they did at a show here recently, and it was this giant touchscreen, like a big TV, and people are swiping on it, and all I could think about was all the hepatitis everybody was going to give each other.
Oh, no.
Nasty. Anyway,
this show's
good game, though. Good game.
Moving on, do you like Bleach fast things?
Who doesn't?
Well, I'm not talking about Julian Assange in bed talk.
Whoa!
I'm talking about the wide Galaxy S2 Skyrocket, which has LTE and is coming to AT&T on December 4th. Yeah, we took it there.
I'm disappointed now.
I knew where you were going. And
yes, I realized that was much later than it needed to be.
That worked.
It needed to happen at some point.
Had to dash your hopes. Apple's much-anticipated Grand Central Terminal store will open on December 9th. The opening date was made official today with an updated message on the digital signage installed on the construction barrier surrounding the store. Just open already. Gosh. Sick of hearing about this. These days, you can't even trust an official source, which is what we did when we believed an official ASUS spokesperson who said the U.S. would get the Transformer Prime officially on December 9th. ASUS now says the release date will be December 12th online and December 19th retail. Warning, those dates could slip further if ASUS doesn't get enough pre-orders. Pricing will be $499 for the 32-gigabyte version and $599 for the 64 version. Finally, IDG announced that the much-loved Game Pro magazine will cease publication after the next issue. The Game Pro website will cease to exist in entirety on December 5th and will begin redirecting users to PC World's website.
Blah.
Sorry to see you go,
Game Scott, Pro. You were a big Game Pro reader, huh?
I read it a bunch when I was much younger. I would say that it was kind of written on the wall a little bit lately, because in the last couple of years, they've gone through a bunch of redesigns and none of those seem to stick or boost subscriptions. And I think that the writing was on the wall. It's sad because, I mean, it's an old publication in gaming. It's been around since 89. It's kind of a big deal, but it feels like this is just going to keep happening. It's just too easy for me to go to a website or a blog and go, all right, I've got a month's worth of video game knowledge in about 5 minutes here. And why do I need to wait for a monthly magazine to come to tell me any of that?
Yeah. Well, that's why they're going out of business.
Yeah. I don't like it. I hate it. I don't want anyone to think I hate there. I love this idea because I hate it. I love a good read on a magazine. I love PC Gamer magazine, for example. And I hope that they can continue as well. But I don't know. It just feels like their time maybe is up.
I still read Life magazine.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a great
magazine. I still eat Life cereal. So we have that.
I still read Highlights.
I still
think the dentist.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Highlights for kids. Do they still have Goofus and Gallant?
Maybe.
Cricket.
Mm-hmm. She does. She's a poser.
Come on.
You don't really read
Highlights.
My kid
at heart.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Our first incoming message is a video message from Darth Galt, who helps us straighten out our misunderstanding of scorpions. This is what happens when we use a metaphor.
Like
our audience tells us more than
we
ever
we all
could
said
have
it.
Hoped to know. Take it away, Darth Galt.
Ew.
This is Darth Galt in Kansas City.
He's
to answer the question, do scorpions nest? Scorpions can be found under logs, under rocks, and they don't actually have nests in the normal sense of the word. Mm. They actually take their nest with the mother scorpion carrying their young.
Delicious.
On a
side note, other valuable uses of scorpions are teabagging Johnny Cage,
whoa,
clashing with Titans, and melting faces. This has been a Scorpion Report brought to you by Darth Galt.
Everything you need to know about scorpions. Thank you, Darth Galt.
I'm not hungry anymore.
That was really funny, the teabagging thing. That's a great video game reference. Hats off to that guy.
And we also got a WAV file sent to us.
You're not supposed to open those, Tom.
That's why I do. We sanitized it. Yeah, we used our sandboxing system. We made Ayaz open it.
Yep.
And it turns out that we're owned. No, it turns out that it's a call about Ayaz's desire for a map for the supermarket on your phone.
Hey, TNT crew, this is John from Boston calling about Show 382, specifically the new Google Maps features. I totally get where Ayaz is coming from with regard to grocery stores and supermarkets. I, for one, have been doing a little more of the family's grocery shopping as the new father of twins. My wife hasn't been able to get out quite as much to do some of that stuff she normally does. And up here in Boston, we have a lot of options for grocery stores. There's Roach Brothers, Stop and Shop, Star Market, Walmart, CVS, Costco. And my wife seems to know where every single thing we use is in these various grocery stores. They're all in different places depending on the store. And I, no matter how many times I've gone, never remember where specific items are in which aisles. And oftentimes those signs at the head of the aisles don't really do it justice. So, I could totally love if Google went out and mapped my Roach Brothers and my Stop and Shop and a couple of other stores locally. And if I put in applesauce, it would tell me what aisle to go to, or I could use Street View to maybe you know, navigate there. The GPS part wouldn't matter so much. I can see where that matters more in malls or some bigger
facilities. Yeah, it wouldn't work.
Facilities
exactly. It's too small.
Get you to a storefront. But as far as finding specific items in a store, I think Google Maps would be great. Thanks.
Now, see, I understand what Ayaz was saying because I have the same problem in supermarkets. I was just thinking Google Maps wasn't your best solution for this.
Well, but supermarkets aren't providing a solution, so somebody should.
I think what he's saying is we need another
app. They have analog signs hanging above every aisle.
There's like 10 things on the list, and there's like a million
categories.
They're not
useful. And they have people walking through.
I think
you can ask.
Jason, we established yesterday no one wants to talk to people.
That's true.
That's how you get diseases.
But they're there for that reason.
You communicated. You have a bunch of diseases passing by because you're like, hey, grocer who didn't call in sick. And
really? The disease thing?
Yeah, that's right.
That's not.
Well, look, if Scott's afraid of hepatitis with the touchscreen, I can be afraid of getting sick at the supermarket.
Well, then you might as well just not go anywhere.
I try not to. So I'm psyched about,
that's
so I'm psyched about Amazon Prime, and I'm psyched about Google's plan to ship everything. So in the Bay Area,
if Google did this, would they send dudes in the Safeway with like a little hard hat and a camera that rotates around, and they just kind of walk through?
No, it'd be unmanned. Right?
Well, and they'd have to be doing it all the time because they constantly change where stuff is on those shelves.
You could just use your own
applesauce is always in the same aisle as peanut butter. Pro tip. Okay,
sometimes peanut butter is in its own aisle or it's with the bread in different supermarkets. I've been in Boston. I know what he's talking about. It's scary.
Well,
some people do things crazy. Let's finish off with an email, shall we?
Sean in North Pole, Alaska. That's a great name for a place. Thought this might interest Tom. Yeah. Sean is Santa. University of Alaska Anchorage is chopping down the internet speeds in the dorms, apparently as a result of complaints from the RIAA. They're college students in a dorm, but it goes along with due process. Is the RIAA substantiating the reports, or is it a PFA, as in pluck from air?
So, yeah, according to the KTUU.com story, that's the TV station reporting on this, the dorm is going down to 2 megabits per second, roughly half of what some students are used to during certain times of day. Not enough to stream high-definition movies, but enough to get schoolwork done. This is the stupidest thing in the world. Okay, this is bad legislation in action. We have a federal law that says the RIAA can complain about known piracy on a network to a university, and the university has to respond in some way. It's pretty vague on how they respond. So the University of Alaska said, all right, we'll cut down the bandwidth. You know what that does? That actually makes it harder to do the legitimate things like using Hulu and using Netflix, which is going to force them into using BitTorrent, which is more efficient over low bandwidth connections, and they're going to steal more.
Well, then it was a crappy connection to start with, 4 megabits down.
Exactly.
That wasn't that, like, if it was like, okay, you were getting 1 gigabit per second, I could see, oh, maybe you want to cut it back a little.
Although
four?
Is it the RIAA? Yeah, it's the RIAA. So they don't care about the video. Yeah, steal all the video you want. We don't care. We're the RIAA. Talk to the MPAA about that. The complaints were apparently double in 2010 what they were in 2008. So it's not like they didn't have a legitimate complaint. It sounds like they were finding more illegitimate activity happening on the internet. But the slowing down the internet for students is the solution. This is absolutely the wrong way to go for so many reasons. Because it's not like schoolwork can only be done on low bandwidth connections. What about the guys who are trying to access high-speed bandwidth connections to other universities for streaming video back and forth, live video? There's a countless number of reasons that you would need a high bandwidth connection in a university situation from your dorm room. Just ridiculous.
But even a two megabit connection is enough for me to get to go and torrent the new Disturbed album.
Exactly.
Like, it's still enough to do that. I don't know what they're thinking. It's crazy.
Disturbed, huh?
Well, I'm kind of a fan. So I bought it.
Because he doesn't have 2 megabits.
Right.
No, I'm just kidding. All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching the show. And especially thanks for submitting stories and voting on the stories at technewstoday.reddit.com. That is the place to go. Join the over 3,500 folks who go in there every day and rate stories and submit stories and help us figure out what we should cover every day. It's one of the things we look at to find, okay, what's buzzworthy? What's the audience want? And also don't forget to submit your favorite moments of TNT or any show on Twit for the year at twit.tv/best of. You will get to say, I made that show happen.
That's right.
When we put it.
You'll even get a credit.
Yeah.
If it's that awesome and you're the only one, if you and everybody else recommended it, you might not.
Is that something that might interest you? Go to twit.tv/best of and submit your favorite moment. That's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Scott Johnson, Scojo. What do you got to talk? We already talked about the instant Star Wars,
yes.
The Old Republic edition.
There is so much going on, Tom. I don't even know where to start. You know what the best thing to do? People should just go to frogpants.com, check out the site. Tons of podcasts in there, including a couple that little old Tom Merritt's on. And while you're at it, follow me on Twitter. I'm at Extra Life, and it's a great place to kind of see the hottest goings on in my life.
You want to see hot Scott Johnson? Follow him on Twitter.
That's right.
That's it for this episode of Tech News Today. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our electronic mail address is TNT, the at symbol, and twit.tv. And you can also give us a call and leave us a good old-fashioned phone voicemail. Free call in Butler, Indiana, 260-TNT-SHOW. Darren Kitchen's back with us tomorrow on a Friday. See you then.